Radio power for the people. 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. On today's broadcast, host Melvin Merritt talks with Paige O'Connor, Executive Director of KC Youth Ambassadors, about their work empowering underserved youth with the knowledge that they, as teenagers, have a vital voice and the power to be active participants in their community. Jaws of Justice Radio wants to thank all those who expressed their support for KKFI during the Winter Pledge Drive. Together, we can make a better community. And we also want to thank Mike Murphy for sitting in for Beth Pike today behind the board. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Up next is Melvin and his guest.
Good morning. Welcome to a live edition of Jaws of Justice. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt, right here on KKFI 90.1 FM on your dial. In the studio, as Jeff alluded to, that we have Paige O'Connors. And Paige O'Connors has a bachelor's degree in English from the University of California, Berkeley. She works in the computer software industry before moving to Kansas City with her husband, Roy, in 1989. She is the mother of four young adults. For 13 years, Paige worked as the adult founder and supervisor of Kids Helping Kids and Kids Helping Kids Heal, youth community service organization dedicated to helping children in need. Currently, she privately mentors youth that wants to take on active roles in their community and is the co-founder and executive director of Youth Ambassador, a not-for-profit educational empowerment program for teenagers established in 2010. And I'd like to welcome Paige to this broadcast on Jaws of Justice.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good that you're here. One of the things that I think Jeff that mentioned was that Youth Ambassador is an educational employment program designed to empower underserved teenage youth with important life skills, soft job skills, creative expression, and important adult mentors who will help them become future community leaders willing and able to work for positive change. Tell us a little bit more about this program, other than what I've read, summed it up.
Well, we're an organization that started in 2010. Mm-hmm. We serve students outside of school hours. Mm-hmm. We like to consider ourselves kind of a hug for the students. We empower students with skills needed to become community members that are active participants. Mm-hmm. We hold classes during the school year on Saturdays, mm-hmm. and in the summertime we have a summer intensive 3 days a week. We hire the students to be part of our program. They get minimum wage to participate, and what that does, it's a wonderful carrot that brings them to the table, but it also teaches them the parameters of a job. And we hold them to those parameters. If a student doesn't participate, they can be fired. Mm. We hire students from the age of 14 to 18, so we're giving a lot of students their first job experience. And at 16, when they leave us, if they leave us at 16, they have a resume, they have job experience, they have mock interview experience, and they are ready to go out and get a job in the community.
Do you have something like a program where the kids actually practice job training, in a sense, like working actually at a bank you know, for the training, so that type of training, so they have the skills.
We do not have, they do not work outside of our program. Mm-hmm. Our program will teach the soft skills. We mm-hmm. will teach them the proper handshake, the eye coordination, mm-hmm. the eye contact, mm-hmm. How to, the job etiquette, and what to do and not do in a job situation, how to handle themselves, time management. So they are ready to go into a job setting mm-hmm. and learn the skills of that job at that setting.
So now, do you hold your classes regularly, like the schools, during the day, or how do you conduct your classes?
We do hold a regular schedule. During the school year, we only hold it on Saturdays from 9 to 12. Mm. The reason for that is a lot of our youth that work with us have transportation issues, and we hold our programs in the communities where a lot of our youth come from, but mm. a lot of times those communities are not safe after dark. Mm. And during the winter time, we don't want our youth walking to the facility or taking the bus after dark. Now, in the summer times, they'll work with us 3 days a week, and that's fine. And the kids actually really want more work. They want the opportunity to work more, but we have to take under consideration their safety during the school year.
So what if some of those students come to you and they have experienced some trauma in their lives, and how do you confront that?
Actually, the majority of our students have had high incidence of trauma in their lives so mm-hmm. far. And we're talking about students that are 14, 15 years old. Mm-hmm. Our program really works two-handed. One, yes, we can teach them how to dress up and interview for a job and have a resume in hand, but that won't help them keep a job once they have a job, especially if they've been living with a lot of trauma. So we also teach, we give social support and teach a lot of coping skills like anger management and crisis resolution. Mm-hmm. Recognition of impediments to their success, and help them deal with, I guess, recognize their trauma and learn the coping skills and the resiliency to move beyond the trauma and move forward.
So what steps do you take, especially when a child has been traumatized with various, and as you mentioned earlier, that it's most of them have been traumatized in some type of way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do you just bring them into the classroom and show them these soft skills and other things, or do you address that issue right there?
We will address the issue if they bring it out. Mm. We do. One of our components of our program is a writing class, and every day they will do raw journal writing.
Okay.
Through the journal writing, once trust has formed, a lot of our ambassadors will open up about their past and what they're dealing with. And we teach them that writing is a venue through which they can open up. Mm-hmm. If an ambassador comes out and starts talking about a traumatic experience, where our writing is anonymous, the students know that the writing teacher and myself, being overall in charge, mm-hmm. we know who does the writing. And so we will approach them personally and offer help. An example in how that works, one child, her second time she ever was in the writing class, wrote that she had been physically abused by a family member when she was younger, and she also didn't like going to school because her teacher made them stand up in front of class and read out loud. Mm. Well, this child was basically illiterate. Her writing was, you could barely make it through it. Phonetically, she wrote what she could. So I pulled her aside, and at the time she was 15, and I said, you know, if we can help you if you want help on this. She said she did. The problem with a 15-year-old is that we need parents' permission. That's a problem, and it's good. Mm-hmm. But she said, fine, here's my mother's number. I called her mother, and her mother said, please get her help. Test her academically and see what's wrong with her reading and writing. But no, we do not want help on her physical abuse, her sexual abuse. We're not ready for it. Well, our ambassador was, but the mother wasn't. Hmm. So we went ahead and brought in a professional to test our ambassador on her reading and writing skills. She was 15 at the time, and she tested in the first grade level of reading and writing. We found that this didn't mean that she had missed 15 years of education. She had missed pockets of education because of the transient nature of her family. So we were able to bring in a tutor and tutor her on those pockets that she missed mm-hmm. to connect the dots. Fast forward 2 years, this student is still with us, and we're doing a program on abuse and different types of abuse, and these are small groups.
How old is this student now?
She's 17 at the point, 17. At this point. I'm sitting in because I know a lot of the history of these students through the years, mm-hmm. and when we're dealing with something very sensitive, I like to be there. There were seven girls in the room. Two that I knew of had been sexually abused. This girl was very quiet. All of a sudden, she burst into tears, went to run out of the room, and I put up my arms, and she plopped into my lap and started crying. We went into the hall, and I said, "You still haven't gotten help with your sexual abuse, have you?" And she said, "No." And one thing we do teach them is that they are old enough now to take control back in their lives. Whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, whatever they are dealing with, mm-hmm. they need to take control and get help for it so it doesn't continue to keep control over them going forward.
Sure.
So I was able to tell her where to go without family permission to start at least that process. Just because her mom wasn't able to face it doesn't mean she wasn't, and so she could go to her school counselor to get help.
Mm-hmm. So, I think one of the things that we're going to do at this time, because we want to open up the phone lines, because maybe someone want to weigh in on this topic, because I think it's very much needed to be aired. And especially in, I commend you in what you're doing, and I applaud you for what you're doing, because it takes a special person to really address these issues and needs of our young people. So if you driving or something like that, you want to weigh in on this topic, our telephone number is 816-931-5534. And get your questions ready, and we're going to open up the lines in case you want to weigh in on this, because we think it's interesting. Remember that you're dealing with, you listening to KKFI 90.1 FM on your radio dial. And my next question, Paige, is what happens to the student who is unable to mount over the psychosocial institutional barriers? What happens with that student?
We have a lot of students who are currently living in trauma. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be able to stop the trauma for them. Mm-hmm. We can help them recognize what is healthy and what is not.
Okay.
And give them resources to that help them find out where they can get help. A lot of times, if a child is born in a situation that has been generational in poverty, generational violence, generational, their parents don't know any different. Their parents aren't teaching them any different. This is their world and their norm. And the first step is recognizing that this is not a healthy norm. And once you recognize that, then you teach them the different steps to take to, one, be resilient against the trauma, but two, to change those habits.
Now, we were talking before going on air, and have you experienced any of the children or the young people having problems like having their clothes clean? Do you ever experience anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. We do have students that come in that have not bathed. We definitely have students that are quite hungry. There is a tremendous problem with youth growing up in compromising circumstances in mm-hmm. our town. And unfortunately, because it's easier not to acknowledge it, it's easier to keep our blinders on.
Sure.
We no longer see the neighbor next door. We go on our daily life so we can make it through our day mm-hmm. with a smile on our face and keep our blinders on to the child next door. And we have a lot of children living in compromising situations around town.
Remember now, if you want to weigh in on this topic, the telephone number is 816-931-5534. And I encourage you to weigh in on this topic, and maybe some of you can identify with some of the experiences that some of our young people are having and continuously having. And tell us a little bit about this program that you have within your organization called Social Emotional Learning. What is that about?
Social emotional learning is a evidence-based best practice. We use two of the evidence-based practices. We use SEL, S-E-L, which is social emotional learning, and we use PBL, which is project-based learning.
Okay.
Social emotional learning is the process of developing knowledge, skills, attitudes, and behaviors to make successful choices. And a lot of our program is centered around the positive choice, the proper choice, the good choice. What was a choice that you made this week that really was a positive choice in mm-hmm. your life? The SEL helps you develop social and emotional skills that are really critical for students surrounded by added stressors that make it difficult for them to learn. I have a student who recently, when asked to write about where they sleep at night, he wrote a piece about how he shares his time between two family homes. At his parents' home, he sleeps on the floor in the living room because there isn't a mattress and he doesn't have a bedroom. And a lot of times he'll spend time at his grandmother's house. At his grandmother's house, he'll sleep on the recliner on the front porch. Often the cushion and the pillow are damp and wet, and he wakes up to bug bites, and he's cold. At the end of his writing, he wrote, "This is why sometimes I act goofy when I get to the program." Well, when kids are living in these circumstances, it's very hard to not act out when you're in a situation where you have to keep control.
Right.
If you're hungry, if you're cold, if you're angry, if you've been abused, it's very hard to concentrate in school or in a job situation.
And you know that I'm noticing that a lot of people are just totally numb to a lot of the things that are going on as it relate to our children within the communities. And so they experience things like not having a mattress on the bed and have to sleep on cots, you know, and those types of things. And because the parents can't afford to maintain, because I was listening to a program, and I think it was here on the station that they were talking about that, where children are the parents not having enough money because they make minimum wages.
Correct.
And so they cannot afford to do the things like make a decision on whether to wash the kids' clothes or eat, you know, those types of things. And so they left with very limited choices. And so is it any way possibly that you go in to parents or the children's homes and talk with the parents and see how they can assist what you're doing?
We have not yet.
Okay.
A lot of times, well, several of our youth their problems are stemming from their parents and their relationships with their parents. Mm-hmm. Not all, by any means. Many of our youth have very loving parents. But because some have the problems with their parents, in our program, we teach them to be self-sufficient. We teach them what to do where they can help themselves.
Right.
The teenage years are a very difficult year. They want to be acknowledged as adults.
Sure.
They want to be treated as adults. Well, we have to give them skills where they can be.
They probably can go back into their homes and teach their parents some things.
Absolutely. A lot of them are being their own parents. Mm-hmm. You know, several of our parents work all hours just trying to make ends meet.
Sure.
And so a lot of our parents are, or a lot of our teenagers are going home to empty homes.
Mm.
A lot of them are raising their own siblings. I have one student who, her work as a boxer is what is keeping her parents or her home and those that live inside the home afloat financially. She's 15.
Mm.
She boxes in the morning from 6 to 8, and then she goes to school. But her winnings from boxing is the only thing that's keeping shoes on her siblings' feet.
I want to get into this. You have a couple of books that you have, and one of them is Welcome to My Neighborhood. And I thought it was really interesting that these children coming from their own, is it from their own writings? How did you come up with this book?
We have a fabulous partnership with VML here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And VML came up with the idea of this children's book. The book is it looks just like a children's book.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not for children.
Right.
It
has a warning label on it.
It does have a warning label on it. We do not want children to pick this up, even though it is in the format of a children's book.
Uh-huh.
That's really a shocking juxtaposition between the look of the book and their cute little characters and then the reality of the stories. It follows the three journal writings of three of our ambassadors. One is called A Good Man. This ambassador really questioned what her mother's belief was of what
a good man
was.
Mm-hmm.
Mother, after many men, ended up marrying a man who was a crack addict.
Mm-hmm.
And the story goes into how, you know, he stole the Christmas presents and the birthday money, and she would sit outside on the stoop and listen to this good man beat her sister because she didn't have money for him, for his addiction.
So we have about a couple of minutes before this next half hour, and give us your website or some information that in case someone would be interested in getting or purchasing this book.
The book is available as an advocacy tool. We are not selling it, but if they're interested in the book, we can be reached at www.youthambassadorskc.org.
And is there a number, a telephone number?
On the website, there is a number to reach us.
Okay. So at this time, we'll take a break.
Now, the calendar for February 13th. The KC chapter of Mothers in Charge Healing Support Group will be meeting Thursday, February 16th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Center, Suite 124 West, 3200 Wayne Avenue, KCMO. This group is for people who have lost loved ones to murder and violence. The first hour will be sharing of experiences, and in the second hour, therapists and others who can help navigate the emotional and legal terrain will be available. For more information, you can find them on the web at kcmothersincharge.org or call them at 816-912-2601. The Kansas City, Kansas Public Library, the Unified Government Black History Committee, and the KCK Community College presents The Anatomy of Prejudice with Jane Elliott, Friday, February 17th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Memorial Hall, 600 North 7th Street Trafficway, KCK. Jane Elliott is an iconic educator, feminist, anti-discrimination, and diversity advocate. She is known for her Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes exercise in discrimination conducted with third graders in 1970. Her in-your-face style is designed to create personal examination and change. This event is open to the public. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Tune in next week when host Craig LeBeau returns with another opportunity to learn about child support. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Now, we return to Melvin and his guest, Paige O'Connor, and your phone calls.
Yes, welcome back to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1 FM on your dial. In the studio with me, in case you just tuned in, is Paige O'Connor. She is the Executive Director of Youth Ambassador, a not-for-profit educational empowerment program for teenagers established in 2010. And again, I would like to welcome you to the program of Jaws of Justice.
Thank you.
And so we were talking about your book, and Welcome to My Neighborhood is one of them. It's a child book. It looks like a children's book, but it has a warning label on it because of the contents of what is being said in there. So one of the questions that I wanted to ask is, give us a little bit of information on the demographics and the statistics that you have. And I thought it was interesting when I read it.
Our program is open to any youth age 14 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
We did start in Argentine, Kansas City, Kansas. Our partner was ONDA. We have a small program there in the summertime with only 25 students. Our demographics in Kansas are probably 90% Hispanic, 5% African American, and 5% white.
Mm-hmm.
In Kansas City, Missouri, we have two very large programs that are year-round. Over the summertime, we hire approximately 200 students. 96% are African American. And then we have a couple white students and a couple Hispanic students. There's no reason behind those numbers, with the exception of that's who has called. Our program is first come, first serve. So any student that comes is welcome into our program. We do not have... If a student comes with special needs, we will have someone there with them, walking them through the program. If a student comes who is pregnant, we will, or has children, we will have child care for them. We do have a pregnant 14-year-old right now in our program.
Mm.
Statistic-wise, as I say, at our Mary Kelly site, we have two sites right now in Kansas City, Missouri. Mary Kelly Center holds one of our year-round sites, and so does De La Salle Education Center. At the Mary Kelly site, our numbers were over 61% of those students ages 14 and 15 living in very high trauma situations. Overall, of all of our students this past summer of 175, 41% were high trauma situations. 100% of our students are free lunch and on okay. Medicare, Medi-Cal.
Okay. We had a caller that came in, and but he did not, he elected not to come on air, but he has a question, and how prevalent is homelessness among your kids?
I don't have any students that are living on the streets at the moment. We do have students that couch surf, and they live from one friend's house to the next. I have families that house surf, and the students will write about that. I have had some families that live in facilities here that are transitional facilities from the homeless.
Like a Salvation Army and stuff like that? Do you get students
from that? I have not had any from the Salvation Army yet.
Okay. So it's you don't get any children that lives on the streets or anything?
That we know of at the moment?
That you know of, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's hard because we only have word from the students themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I did, 2 summers ago, think that one of our students was definitely on the streets. She was also pregnant at the time.
Okay.
I was able to find out that she was couch surfing and living out of a motel, but it isn't something that, you know, we have to gain a trust with our students first before they're really
before they open up. Yeah.
And
when you say couch surfing,
mm-hmm.
That's a term I've never heard before, couch surfing.
Oh, my vocabulary, I promise you, has had quite a learning curve over the last few years. Couch surfing is a student or a family is living from one house to the next. They do not have their own. So they'll stay with their auntie. They'll stay with their best friend.
From my understanding, that's
considered homeless.
Yeah.
So we do have some. We just don't have any that are actually living on the streets and in shelters at the moment.
Yeah, because I think one of the directors from City Union Mission came and defined homelessness. And they were saying that, you know, if a person doesn't have their own door key and mm-hmm. they live with someone, is considered homeless. And so a lot of people think because they're sleeping at their sister's house or their brother's house that they don't consider themselves homeless, but they are.
But that is considered homeless.
That is considered homeless.
And we have a lot of students that are coming from families that are doing quite well and have a very strong family unit, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they want their child at the age 14 to go to work and to learn a lot of the fiscal responsibility and the goal setting and the different skills that we teach in the program.
We're getting a lot of callers that call in and ask the questions but don't want to go on the air. But those that, you know, would like to come on the air and ask your question, remember that we're at 816-931-5534. And we have a caller that came on air, or at least not wrote in, and said, do this program, is it open to Johnson County?
We have always seen a great need for Johnson County students in our programs. Unfortunately, Johnson County has a reputation, undeserved reputation, of not needing programs like this.
Mm.
And so the funding right now is available for Jackson County students and urban core students, not suburban students. We definitely want to open a program in Johnson County. There is great need there.
Sure. And one of the other questions was, what areas do you cover?
We cover all of, well, in Kansas City, Kansas, we only have a summer program in Argentine. ONDA partners with us. The money that pays the students' paychecks comes through BPU, and so the students have to live in Argentine. Other than that, on the Missouri side, we cover all areas in the Kansas City, Missouri metropolitan area. We're 96% come from Jackson County. We do have a lot from Grandview, from Independence. Kids are driving in half an hour each way just to come and work at 14.
So are their parents driving them in?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Say if they come in, do you furnish bus tokens? Or it used to be bus tokens, but now they're passes.
We don't yet. It would be nice to look into
mm-hmm.
how to do that for our students,
mm-hmm.
but we do not at the moment.
And not at the moment. So let's say, for instance, that a parent want to get their child into your program, but they don't have a way of possibly getting there. What would you suggest?
Both of our sites in Missouri are on the bus route. Mm-hmm. The students will get paid so they can use some of their money for bus tokens.
That was my next question. Mm-hmm. How often do you pay?
Students get paid every 2 weeks.
Oh, every two
they
weeks.
They get minimum wage, which right now in Kansas City, Missouri is $7.70 an hour. They do get paid properly with taxes taken out and mm-hmm. a paycheck. We do teach banking skills through Youth Ambassadors, so we really encourage direct deposit for them. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, as a minor, our students have to have an adult cosign on that account.
Right.
And sometimes a lot of the parents are having their own financial difficulties, and if they are cosigned on a student's account, the student's money will go directly to pay off those financial difficulties of the parent. So we're having some difficulty getting bank accounts, the kids to open bank accounts, but we definitely teach the knowledge behind it.
Yeah, because the reason why I was asking that question is that they may have problems getting to school, and yet they don't have the funds to get there, and they're not going to get paid for 2 weeks.
Right.
And so, you know, if the parents is financially strapped, which you probably experience a lot as it relates to the parents and students. And so
that is one of the main reasons we hold our sites in the areas we serve. Mm-hmm. The Mary Kelly Center is pulling students from directly around the Mary Kelly Center, and there are a lot of students that walk directly to the site.
Oh.
Same with De La Salle Education Center.
So that's interesting that, you know, that you are gearing it to the students that's right around in your area. So how would you do this? And I know that you haven't gotten to that point if you were reaching out to Johnson County.
We would then open a site out in Johnson County. Yeah, we feel very strongly there are a lot of buildings in town that are not being used all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel very strongly that we use those buildings in the areas where we serve. Our money, we really work on a tight budget. We use every spare penny to go to hiring more students.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't pay for our facilities. Our facilities are all donated. Three of us, I have always donated my salary back. Two other directors in our program donate their salary back. So we can hire more and more students as we
Now, do you have volunteer tutors or any of those types of things?
We do have tutors available after school if the kids want the tutoring.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, once again, that's difficult because they have to get from school to our site before it turns dark. Schools we're finding now are also offering the tutoring at school,
mm-hmm.
at their school. But we do have it available if they wish to have it. Other than that, we have volunteers come in all of the time. They help us with mock interviews.
Okay.
They come in and speak on different issues in the community.
Okay.
So we love volunteers working with us.
So, we talked about barriers and children that's been traumatized and mm-hmm. things like that. And how many barriers that the children faces in terms of them really learning? What are some of the barriers?
I think the main ones, we do we call it a privilege game or privilege line. The children actually enjoy doing this game, and we use it so the students can get to know each other. We ask several different questions, and as you ask a question, if the answer is positive, the child will stand on the line, and if not, they will back up.
We have a caller on air. Caller, you on air.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, my name is Beth Pike. I'm usually there as the engineer, and I've offered apologies for not being there, but this program is outstanding that you're offering. And educating our children is so important in the positive reinforcement. I was wondering if you might happen to have something from one of the children and that you could read over the air.
Absolutely. I will read a story from Welcome to My Neighborhood. It's a newly published book that we use as an advocacy tool. The first story is called The Good Man. This student that wrote this story was an ambassador. She then became an assistant teacher. She now teaches with us. She is married, is a student at KU, and has twin boys.
It's called, wow.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We have two students that are now teachers with us. The second student got a full ride to the University of Chicago, graduated in honors with two degrees, and is going for his PhD. So they're fabulous kids. Okay, so this is called...
Commend you for your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. This is called The Good Man. I never understood what Mommy considered a good man. She had five children over the course of 7 years by four different men. Then she married someone she thought would be a good man. He was a crack addict and constantly stole Christmas presents and birthday money. Then one day, this good man beat my sister because he didn't have money to buy more crack. I sat outside my home and listened to my sister scream for help. This good man forced everyone I loved to leave, and now I'm stuck at home alone every day with this good man.
Read the one with the brothers. I thought that was really interesting.
This student...
She has three brothers.
I'll tell you a little bit more about her after I read the story. It's a phenomenal story for her. This story is called My Big Brothers. I have three big brothers. I love them very much, but they don't always do the right thing. The first one is in prison because he tried to rob a bank. My second brother is in prison because he shot a man 11 times in broad daylight. The man owed my brother money, but didn't pay it back. And then there's my third brother. Someone tried to rape him in a bathroom, so he choked that man to death. I love my big brothers, but they don't always do the right thing.
Now, are they actually persons that wrote that story?
Yes.
The people that wrote the story?
Yes. These you mean the journal entries?
The journal, yeah.
Those are condensed versions of the journal entries. The actual journal entry is right here in the book, right beside the story.
I see.
And the third one is about a young girl whose mother doesn't have enough money to feed the family. Would you like me to read it?
Yeah.
It's called Dinner Time. Everyone needs to eat, but they can't always afford to. Like my mommy. Mommy would go to the store, but she could only get enough food for one night. We would all go home, and she would cook the food and feed us. But I knew there wasn't enough food for her, so every day I ate just a little bit and drank big glasses of water. That way I would feel full, and I could offer her the rest. She kept telling me to eat because I needed the strength to learn and grow, but I would tell her that I get lunch at school, so I am full of energy. So she would take the food because everyone needs to eat. And then at the last sentence of her actual journal writing, she said, of course she would take it because she knows I get school lunch. I did this all the time and it always made her proud.
Thanks, Beth, for bringing that up. And thank you for calling in. And I guess I'll see you at the station later.
You will, and thank you. Thank you. This is a wonderful program that you're offering.
Thank you.
Yeah, I commend her. Yeah, she's doing a fantastic job with this program. Remember, if you still would like to weigh in on this topic, our number is 816-931-5534, and I encourage you to call in and ask Paige some questions that maybe I haven't asked at all. So call in. It's 816-931-5534. And some of the other things that, like with the journals that they wrote, Paige, tell us a little bit about their journal that they were and how important it is for them to.
In our program, every day that the students come in, they go through four different classes.
Mm-hmm.
One class is life skills, where they learn all kinds of life skills and social support skills. In the life skills course, they learn financial responsibility. They learn goal setting, smart choices. They learn anger management and crisis resolution. They learn healthy families. They learn health. So it's really a catch-all phrase, our life skills class. But mm-hmm. it's all of the things that you want to teach your child growing up. And a lot of our parents don't have the time to do that. They're working too hard to put food on the table. Then each child goes through an art class for creative expression. They go through a speech class. Speech is very important, whether it's at school, for job interviews, for college. You need to know how to present yourself in front of others and to speak properly. And then they have a writing segment. And writing they do every day. They learn how to release through writing, how to accept their current situations and past mm-hmm. circumstances, and then to move on and go forward.
And I noticed that you have a program in is art. Tell yes. us a little bit about that.
Art is a great way for those who have a problem with the written word to express themselves and to release through art. Right now, though, this semester, we are incorporating STEM into our programming. A lot of the students these days are missing the science and technology and engineering and math that is so needed in our curriculums. And so in art, our students are learning how to make mechanical games, which they're having a lot of fun with. And in speech, they're doing project-based learning, which was the second evidence-based type of teaching mm-hmm. approach that we bring on. And they are about to start collaboratively researching the geobond that's going to be on our ballot here in April. And they'll research how it affects them in this community,
mm-hmm.
the positives, the negatives, and how they can make a stance and go forward in the community and educate people before the bond issue comes out.
Yeah, art is another way of expressing the person's self, I imagine.
Right.
Yeah, and so they're able to do paintings or?
They are. We try to present all different types of art mm-hmm. to them. And initially, they would be doing their own pieces, but then we thought that since they are ambassadors, they needed to work collaboratively on large pieces that are now hanging around the Kansas City metropolitan area. So CCO has some artwork there. The Kauffman Center has artwork there. The Mary Kelly Center has artwork. We are doing large collaborative pieces that then we hang around the city.
Sure. If you just now tuning in to KKFI 90.1, in the studio with me, I'm the host, Melvin Merritt, and our guest is Paige O'Connors, and she is the executive director of the Youth Ambassadors, a not-for-profit educational empowerment program for teenagers established in 2010. And so she's talking about this this program, which is unique and awesome program because of the fact that the children and the young people that she is reaching, and with that learning, teaching them life skills, soft skills, and other creative expressions, and having adult mentors, and really reconstructing a young person's life, and with this program called the Youth Ambassadors. And if you want to weigh in on this topic, the number is 816-931-5534. And I encourage you, if you can identify with some of the things that she's talking about, and maybe even possibly looking on the internet and looking up this this very interesting and hard-hitting book that she has with the illustration of a bunny and a little mice and a cat on the front of it, but it definitely has a warning label on it. So, but it's hard-hitting, but it's factual because it's coming from the students themselves and some of their own personal experiences. So weigh in on this topic, 816-931-5534. And some of the other things that we talked about, especially with those barriers, and we talked about the speech and arts and things like that, and some of the social emotional learning. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that. And we talked about it once before.
Well, currently, 100% of our ambassadors have lost a relative to violence.
Mm-hmm.
100% of our ambassadors have had a close family member incarcerated. We need to, and probably about 90% of our ambassadors do not have a father figure present in their lives. We need to teach our youth how to be resilient, how to deal with their circumstances in a healthy way in order to move forward.
Sure.
It's interesting. The Chamber of Commerce has done a fabulous job starting a program called Resilient KC. And they are pulling through it. Jasmine Williams is running it. They are pulling all different segments of our society in Kansas City together to recognize adversity in our community and how to work with resiliency.
Give us real quick your information again in case anyone might be interested in getting that information, like your website and what they can do.
Our website is youthambassadorskc.org, and you can reach us through the website. We'll get back to you right away.
Well, again, I want to thank you for being my guest on Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. And I commend you. Keep on keeping on and keep doing what you're doing, because I commend you tremendously. And
thank you very much.
Glad to have you.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Our guest on last week's Cultural Baggage Show was Dr. David Behrman, author of a brand new book, Drugs Are Not the Devil's Tools.
I mean, you're talking about tobacco in there. You're talking about heroin, cocaine, all of them, really, to how they've impacted our society and how we've been distorted and turned the wrong direction.
Yes, and that has actually, at least for this country, has gotten worse and worse over the last 100 years. I mean, until the Harrison Narcotic Tax Act of 1914, pretty much anything went. And as far as problems, there really weren't any substantial problems. I mean, yeah, you had your drunks, and you did have some people that were habituated to opiates, but what we've done by prohibition, first with alcohol and then with opiates and then with cannabis, is take a potentially minor or at least not major health problem and turn it into a major social problem that has had incredibly pernicious effects on our government.
Yes, Dr. Behrman, I see the I don't know how to put it, just this belief system that we've got now. It's a quasi-religion, this belief in the drug war. You don't need any substance to continue believing. Would you agree with that thought?
I couldn't agree with it more, which is why there's a chapter in my book on drugs and religion. I mean, what's really ironic is that psychoactive drugs are the basis for all modern religions. And the reason that I say that is that we owe many of our core beliefs to the Zoroastrians, and the Zoroastrians passed them on to the Jews, who passed them on to the Christians. What core beliefs am I talking about? I'm talking about God, the devil, heaven, hell, and the Last Judgment. Those were all concepts that came from the Zoroastrians, and the Zoroastrian spiritual leaders, in order to get their spiritual insight, consumed soma, which a lot of people like to think that it was the Amanita muscaria mushroom, the white speckled red top mushroom. Others say, look, it could have been any psychoactive substances that grew near where people of that religion lived in any great numbers. So they had these visions, these were some of the concepts that they came up with somewhere along the 6th or 7th century before Christ. So they've been around for a long time.
David Behrman, author of Drugs Are Not the Devil's Tools. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or its staff and volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio page on Facebook. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at kkfi.org. This is your engineer for Jaws of Justice Radio, Beth Pike. And be sure to tune in Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. when I host the Thirsty Thursday edition of your Morning Buzz. Our outro music is Better Man, and that's from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Khadija and the White Guy at 9 a.m. on Thursdays, and then Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues. That's with Luscious Lynn. And then at noon, it's Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. You'll want to stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and then Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo en Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.